waiting for them to expire, and I got wolves down below me barking and above me, and all I got is my can of bear spray in one hand and my knife in the other.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry Podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, visit exomountaingear.com. Well, welcome to episode 146. Before we get into the topic for today's episode, I wanted to give a shout out to Kager Outdoors for leaving us the review on iTunes. So Kager Outdoors, send us your shipment information and we will send you some Exo Mountain Gear and Hunt Backcountry Podcast swag. And listeners, to enter these giveaways, it's simple. Just leave us a review in iTunes, on Stitcher, or wherever else you might be listening to this. Or just contact us directly with your questions, suggestions, an idea for a future show to podcast@exomountaingear.com. All right, in this episode, it's Steve and I with our buddy Tyler Boschma. And we talk about some experiences that Steve and Tyler had in Idaho this past September during elk season, specifically talking about wolf encounters that they had. So Steve had this unique situation where he was surrounded by essentially a pack of wolves, and we hear all about that. Tyler separately killed a bull and had some crazy wolf encounters. He heard them before the shot, and then he heard some kind of wild noises after the shot, and just really talk about what it's like to hunt and kill and then pack out this bull in wolf country where you know there's active wolf activity. We also talk about Steve's elk kill from later that week in September, and I guess learn how to kill an elk in 6 hours. It's crazy stuff. Anyway, it's a fun episode. There's much more to pull out of that than just what I mentioned, but really just a good recap of some fresh experiences from this past September and Tyler and Steve's elk season. So more to come on that. Don't forget, if you guys have a story from your season, we'd love to hear it. Just send us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Let's dive right into this episode. Tyler, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry Podcast. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, definitely.
Steve, how's it going, buddy?
I am fantastic, man.
So we are going to get right into this one, talk a bit about the experiences that each of you had hunting elk in Idaho this September. And part of that is wolves. Steve, I want to dive right into something. I was sitting at home one night, got a text from you from your InReach, and said, have a story for the podcast. Just had 5 wolves surround me tonight at 15 yards. I can't say a family-friendly thing you said after that. you said you got 2 shots off. It was nuts. Maybe the most intense encounter you've ever had. So I just want to start by hearing that story, because I haven't even asked you to tell me that story because I was saving it to hear it in real time.
Yeah, it was hands down the most intense encounter I've ever had. I've somewhat been unlucky or lucky to have a couple cool experiences. Now, one was a mountain lion stalking me a few years back when I was by myself. And then this one kind of tops that. So yeah, I was up hunting with my dad opening weekend, and you know, he's getting older. He's in his mid 60s, so he's not getting around that well. And, so we did a morning hunt together, and then I went out and did an evening hunt by myself, and went to back to some old stomping grounds that I used to hunt, you know, 10, 12 years ago. Got up in there, and I was basically, hindsight looking at it, like I was, you know, it was like the perfect scenario to call in a wolf, because it's an old burn, big, open, huge basin, like a mile and a half across, no wind, nothing. And I was kind of doing the born and raised, just bugling every like 150 yards, every time I came over a little rise or had a little different country to bugle into. And I'd been doing that over the course of probably 3/4 of a mile. And then when I got to the ridge top, I was basically kind of at this point where there's like three different basins. I was like, I could just walk like 5 yards, call into this one, walk 10 yards, call down to that one. And I was sitting right up on top, hanging out. I was just going to sit there for 10 minutes and I was eating a snack. And, you know, I just got done bugling and I just kind of out of the, you know, left corner of my eye, I just noticed movement, you know, immediately kind of like turn my head, slowly start to like bring my left arm down and grab my bow. You know, I'm just assuming it's an elk coming in. And I see gray and I'm like, oh crap. And I'm like, whoa, that's a wolf. And then there's enough trees and limbs in the way. It wasn't like wide open where, but I could make them out and it was, or, you know, make the wolf out. And it was basically staring straight at me, kind of like in a stalking, like, you know, like I see my dog do when she's, you know, when she's scenting some birds, you know, she kind of crouches down lower and her head's kind of like pointed out and nose kind of, you know, up in the air a little bit. And anyways, see the wolf probably 40-ish yards away. And then so my immediate, you know, thought was, okay, like safety, basically. Like what do I have? I've got my bow. I've got an arrow knocked. I've got a knife in my pocket. I don't pack a pistol, which if I ever go back there solo again, I'm definitely going to. And then I had my pack because I'd opened up my pack to get some snacks out. My inReach was attached to the shoulder harness, which was basically face down on the ground. So I'm like, playing all those scenarios out of, you know, where my inReach is, what, you know, if I need to get a knife, where it's at, look behind me, I got a bunch of rocks behind me. And then, so once I kind of checked off all those boxes, then I start wondering, like, what should I do? I got this wolf at 40 yards. I don't see any other wolves. Should I, like, you know, I guess it was like, should I sit back? My thought process was, should I just jump up and yell and have this thing run off? Like, I'm by myself. I don't want to chance a encounter, right, of something going bad. Or do I just don't move, stay still, and hope I get a shot at this thing? Maybe it doesn't know exactly like where I am. It just heard the sound and it was coming towards it. For whatever reason, I decided to, you know, I guess I just wanted to shoot a wolf with my bow. It'd be a pretty cool story. So I just held still and I think like 30 seconds ish goes by. It felt like 5 minutes and the hill is kind of rounded. So it's like, definitely like, and I was on my knees. If I'd stood up, I could have probably seen the wolves coming in, but I was on my knees. The hills were kind of rounded and, you know, 30 seconds ish go by and I look, and I'm just kind of, I'm not really moving, just moving my eyeballs left and right, just trying to scan, see if I can see any others. And just about the time I start getting excited, cause like, okay, this is just a lone wolf. Like I got this. That thought process goes through my head. And then four wolves, two from the left, two from the right, start coming over the ridge. And you know, they're inside of 20 yards, just how it laid out, you know, 20 yards to my left, 20 yards to my right. And then it was an immediate like, oh, crap, this just changed drastically. And they were just kind of stalking in, not like, you know, they were moving slow, but they weren't like, you know, crawling. It was just slowly walking in the direction, kind of hunched down of where they heard the bugle. And it looks like, you know, they were like pointed 10 yards in front of me, not like coming right at me, but like, that's kind of where they had honed in on the sound. Yeah, anyways, I see him. I immediately, you know, don't know if it's true or not, but you know, shoot the alpha wolf is what popped into my head. So I'm looking for the biggest wolf. It was the furthest one to my left. And then I draw my bow and they all just like, I see them all just stop and stand up and, you know, like look straight at me and go, what was that? And I basically swung my bow arm to the left. And I had, unfortunately, right in the midst of all this, there's just one, you know, like inch and a half thick limb, dead limb going right through the middle of the vitals on this wolf. And he's probably 13-ish yards. I mean, by the time I saw them, made the decision which one to shoot, drew, swung my bow arm over, they had continued to got closer, right? And so I had a limb and then, you know, it's funny, this, I've got, I do a very odd pin setup where it's my first pin's 27 yards, basically splits the distance between 20 and 30. Works awesome when you're, you know, hunting elk and stuff like that, especially mule deer, more open country stuff. But if I, in hindsight, if I was hunting super thick country, you know, you'd probably want just your 20 yard pin. So I had this 27 yard pin and a limb at like 10 yards and a wolf 3 yards behind that. Didn't know where to hold. Just kind of, I actually just put the pin right on the limb thinking it's got to just go right over the top of it. Somehow I just barely nicked the limb and I see the arrow. I've got this bright white wrap and orange fletching and it's super easy to see the arrow. And I just see it skip, hit the limb and just skip right over its back. Like it looked like it shaved fur off. And so right when I shot, they all yipped and yelled. It was this like high pitch, almost coyote-like sound. And then the big one ran down to the left. The other four ran down to the right. You know, was, again, we're up on top of this ridge. And so I jump up, knock another arrow. Another one stands down there, I guessed 40 yards and shot, and shot right over its back. And then I proceeded. I was literally like, it's as scared as I've ever been in the woods. My bugle tube was on the ground, the pack. I grabbed both of those and just like sprinted off that mountain. I think I didn't stop for a good solid 2 miles. I was definitely on edge, and I was headed the direction I saw that bigger wolf go, because I said the other four had gone to the right and that one went left, and I didn't know where it went. I assumed it probably looped around, but I was definitely like head on a swivel, just hauling butt out of there. And then yeah, I immediately, once I got down to the bottom, you know, texted you and a few other friends, and it was just like, holy crap, that just happened. You know, it's definitely just a story that you hear of, but you never ever think would happen to you. I mean, I knew I was going into thick wolf country. I'd hunted that country for years and still didn't consider packing a pistol, even though I own one. It's just not something that was really on my radar as an option that could happen out there. So, yeah, it was quite the experience. They were all white. They weren't, the alpha male was fairly big. I'd say like 80 to 100 pounds. And then the other ones weren't that big. I'd say like, you know, my dog Greta's 50 pounds, and they were probably, you know, a little bit bigger than her. I'd say 60-ish, 65 pounds, something like that. So they weren't huge, which was, I guess, you know, if they're all just giant wolves, like sometimes we see tracks and you think it's a 150-pound wolf, that'd have been even more scary. But it was, I guess, one more story I can tell the grandkids later in life.
Nuts. So the whole idea on shooting the alpha wolf, just that if you shoot, you know, one of the smaller wolves, the alpha wolf might, you know, still stay, still attack, still whatever?
I don't know. I'd love to have a wolf expert on here, but I think it's the alpha wolf's the leader, and if you shoot the leader, the other ones don't quite know what to do and maybe run off. I'm not sure. Makes sense. If you're in a fight with a group of dudes, you pick out the biggest dude who's probably the one leading the group. And
yeah, cold cock him.
Yeah.
Oh man. So Tyler, the wolves get into your story a bit more later into the hunt. And like even after you kill a bull, which we'll get to, but before that, what just set up the context for the hunt. So you were coming to Idaho, kind of what was the plan, what was the setup, and how did the start of the hunt go for you?
So Steve and I had talked about doing this for a while, and we finally made it happen. And while I came out early, the plan was to kind of get out, figure out some ground, especially after Steve had his encounter there. We're like, well, let's go ahead and make a plan and try out some different country that I've been eyeballing and whatnot. So for the first time ever, took a camper out, took a trailer I bought and set up a little camper and started scouting out some new area. And I think it was a pretty rough year to start out with for me as far as just elk hunting in general. In Oregon, I went 9 days before I killed a spike, and then got to Idaho with pretty high hopes. And the first 2 days were just nothing. Like, didn't hear a bugle. All the sign I was seeing was, you know, kind of old. And then I was seeing wolf signs. So it was the third day in Idaho, I finally got a bugle, got a bull to answer, and actually a couple bulls. Went into a new drainage and kind of found a little spot where there was some rut activity. So anyway, long story short, I buggered up a setup I had on a bull that day, and I checked out a few other spots. And anyway, long story short, made a plan to come back in there the next day because I was kind of day hunting it, or at least until Steve got there. I planned on just checking out as many little pockets of ground as I could. And the next day, as I was going in this drainage, this is actually where my wolf story kind of starts right away, actually. But I was going in and I was bumping along this trail. It's actually pretty popular, like, trail that a lot of people in that area use. It's very, it's a high traffic trail for sure.
In terms of and just like right, hikers right and stuff?
Hikers, people on bikes, like pedal bikes, mountain bikes, and horseback. I mean, you got it all. It's just a real popular access point to a lot of country back there. So anyway, I'm bump along this trail and it's nice and come up over this rise, and it's just as the sun's kind of starting to do its thing where you can see a little hazy light, but you know, it's not full on light yet. no sun hitting anything, and just kind of taking it all in and looking over the landscape and coming up with a plan in my head. And I hear an elk bugle, and I'm like, oh, heck yeah, this is good. Right back where I'd left off the day before. And so I'm getting excited, and then I hear the wolves start popping off, and there's a couple of them in there howling. And it really seemed like they're within 100 yards of where that elk bugled from. And so I'm kind of listening to it, taking it all in, and then the elk bugles. Like right in between all this commotion, I've always heard, you know, the elk will just shut up and won't say anything, but this bull apparently didn't care too much about the wolves and was still bugling. And so I kind of decided to sit down and glass a little bit. And as I'm glassing these little pockets, I found one of the wolves bedded down, just sitting on the edge of this timber, big old white blocky headed thing. And then, yeah, I could see it howl every few minutes, train its head back and do a little howl. And it was pretty cool, and kind of took it all in for a bit. And then I kind of snapped to and decided I better make a plan. And actually was thinking of Steve's story, how you got them to come in, and a few other people I know that have got wolves to come in. So I'm like, well, I might as well try it. I mean, my elk hunting might be over, so I got nothing to lose. So I start kind of changed plans a little bit and started pulling that ridge that ran right to where those wolves were. And you know, they stopped howling by this point, but I was getting up their ways, and I was guessing within 150, 200 yards of them, and started just kind of looking around because now the sun is up, and I see an elk. I'm like, whoa. And it's kind of going into some aspens, and it's a little 5x5 bull. And so I kind of watch him for a bit, and I start kind of shifting gears. I'm like, well, I need to get back to elk hunting anyways. That's what I'm here for. So I'm making a plan up in my head how I could go after this bull. And he's just in a real wide open spot with just this tiny little aspen patch. And he, you know, he went into that. I'm sure he's done for the day. You know, he's going to stay in there. So I'm kind of coming up with a plan how I'm going to get the wind right. And I noticed way up the hill, there's four elk, and there's a good bull. All I have is my binoculars with me, but I can see like the bull with them is pretty good bull. And so now that kind of changes dynamic. I'm like, well, it's on the same main ridge line. I could go after that big bull, and then if I bugger that up, I could go after the small 5-point. And so I make the plan and kind of start hiking that hill. And as I'm doing it, I'm like, ah, the wind's too crazy. I just need to go after that little bull. And so I sit down for like an hour and sit above that little bull, trying to talk myself into going after him, waiting for the wind. And finally I texted a few buddies, and I'm like, you know what? I just need to go after the big one. And the wind was good. I mean, there's only, you know, the only person, only thing I have is just me making excuses not to go after it. So I went after the big bull. And the crazy thing about this story too is this was September 11th. And the elevation from where I saw the bull and to where I climbed to get to the big bull, long story short, was 1,100 feet, which is what the towers is. So anyway, looking back on it all, it's just super cool to have that weird little like September 11th. And, you know, afterwards I looked at my GPS and looked at the climb. I was like, wow, that was 1,100 feet, which is the height of the towers and whatnot. So anyway, I made the climb, got up to where I saw that bull go into the trees. And I guess I'm forgetting a part. When they were going into the trees, they were acting pretty skittish. They like went into the timber, and then they ran out, and then they went back in and ran out a couple times. Like, they're just acting super flighty. So that was another reason why I was almost questioning if it's worth even going in there, because it's like, oh, they're probably not even going to be there. They're going to jump into some real thick stuff. And anyway, so I get up in that timber where I saw him kind of run back and forth, and I start doing the born and raised thing, you know, just bugling every 100 yards and kind of sticking to that plan. And my buddy Nate Jones, you guys have had him on here, he does that a lot too. So I was texting him. I said, man, this is weird. I saw this bull come in here, and I know there's, you know, been wolves and whatnot, but I've been bugling, and he's just not answering me. And he's like, well, it's stick to the plan, dude. And I'm like, okay, well, you're right. So I go like another 100 yards and I let off a bugle. And this thing rips off like just the gnarliest bugle. And I'm like, holy smokes, this is like, he's within 200 yards. So I just go on a dead sprint. Like I just don't do another thing. I don't bugle, nothing. I just sprint right towards him, crashing over limbs, just making a big time ruckus and get up, you know, about 80 to 100 yards, kind of cut that distance in half. And I can already just hear him doing the same thing. And so I kind of get down, make a few cow calls, he bugles, and I break a bunch of limbs and throw them behind me, get my release snapped in, arrow knock, do a couple range finders around me, and this bull is like there. Like the next time I see him, because I just, it's so thick in there by this point that all I can see is his hooves coming. And so I come to full draw and he comes around. And as he kind of comes up to this little opening, 16 yards, and that's the first time I actually put eyes on him up close, you know, other than glassing him. And so, yeah, right away, I was like, well, that's a shooter. And I shot him. He was kind of quartering towards and hit him a little low, but good. Like, he was pumping blood. And luckily, I got a second arrow in him as he was leaving. And anyway, it kind of turned into a little bit of a rodeo. But as I was getting on that bull, that's when the second part of the little story kicked in, and I was waiting for him to expire. I just put a third arrow in him, and I started hearing some weird noises. And at first I thought it was just his cows. I was like, well, maybe it's just his cows leaving. And I'm like, no, I heard them barking, and, you know, after all the commotion. And and then I start hearing this like dog bark almost, just, I think I sent you the link, and it's kind of like this weird, just this hollow bark. I don't know how to describe it, but I've never heard them do it. But anyway, they're around me. I can hear the wolves, and they're barking back and forth, and no howling, none of that stuff, no growling that I could hear, but just this bark, this weird hollow bark, and above and below me. So I remember I texted Nate again. I told him, hey, I got that bull. But now I'm sitting here waiting for him to expire, and I got wolves down below me barking and above me, and all I got is my can of bear spray in one hand and my knife in the other. But, yeah, I didn't know what it meant. Like, just total rook, you know, didn't know anything about that bark. And I guess it's afterwards, looking back, it's, I guess, more of an alarm thing. So I don't know if they were in on those elk, and that's why they were running in and out of that timber in the morning, and they were also making a play on those elk because I was, or what. But it just poured all the commotion of us bugling, that because it, that's what's weird about it, it didn't last but 2 minutes. From the time I remember telling Nate I was having a hard time getting in a bugle to the time I killed him was like 2.5 minutes. I mean, once he fired off and I ran towards him, it would just happen super quick. So I don't know if the wolves are in there or bedded down or doing something, but yeah, they were there, and it was pretty wild having them bark all around me for a bit. And I don't know. Luckily, a few friends came out to help, and I knew I didn't have to break down that bull by myself, so I just backed out and waited for them and went back in, but pretty crazy.
That's wild, man. Yeah, it's interesting that you got that bull was still vocal. And still there with, it sounds like, as skittish as they were, and with the wolves around, and the bull was obviously aware of the wolves. They probably heard the same howling you did that morning, but it kind of just goes to show, when you close the distance and when you're bugling at a bull from that, you know, relatively close distance, they make decisions that are just triggered. You know what I mean? It's not like they're maybe as consciously thinking as much as we think they might. It's just they're triggered by the bugle. They're territorial, they're defensive, they're whatever, and they're willing to respond in that. And I think that's a good example of that scenario.
Yeah, definitely.
So you went quite a few days early in the hunt without hearing anything. Was it tough to stay in it, you know, just kind of mentally and keep after it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it helps that I've never really considered myself an elk hunter. I like to do it, I like the meat. But I've always kind of, especially down in New Mexico, hunting them like I do mule deer. I don't spend a lot of time calling. And so I guess maybe just knowing that it was early season. But yeah, between Oregon and Idaho, I think it was 13 days before I heard that first bugle, the day before I killed my bull.
Crazy.
Sticking in it and not hearing a single bugle. My buddy Nick, who was with me in Oregon, could attest to how rough it is 9 days without, you know, it just, and we were in super elky stuff too. I mean, every time, and it just, yeah, I don't know, just that early season kind of, we started in August like 25th in Oregon, and then Idaho was fairly early. That was the 10th when I finally heard my first bugle. So
it's crazy to me too, because like we had a similar experience in Idaho this year where you drop over one ridge or just move one drainage and the whole game can change. Thinking of like when we were hunting Summit Bull, Steve, we were on this bull for 2 days that was as fired up as I've ever seen a bull. And then we had hunted one drainage over a couple days later and it was super elky, but there was like nothing, no sign, no vocalization. And actually there wasn't wolf sign, which could have been a factor, but it doesn't cease to amaze me how much you can just go over one ridge and the whole game changes.
Yeah, it's the whole keeping the positive attitude thing, right? It just takes one more, you know, next ridge over, or, you know, just the next elk for things to completely turn around on you, and it can happen fast.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned, Tyler, that shot at 16 yards, he was a little quartering too. You kind of, you know, hindsight being 20/20, playing armchair quarterback, we're kind of questioning maybe wait a little bit, be a little bit more patient, see if that shot gets better. What are your kind of thoughts on that in-the-moment decision of, do you take this first shot opportunity, even if it's maybe not ideal, versus waiting it out? How do you go through that?
Definitely. I think, you know, just as I mature and whatnot, I may be more open to, or I'm just critical, you know, of myself. But I know that I should have let that shot develop. I know that, you know, just quartering towards, even though it's only 16 yards, isn't a super high percentage shot. And, you know, if I would have given him just a few more steps, the angle he was coming, he would have been 12 yards in broadside. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, what's the worst could happen? He would have went 5 yards. I was already at full draw. I had, and my pins were on him. I didn't have anything to lose. And I think I just got in my own head. I was like, oh, I need to make the shot now. This is so close. Like, and so, yeah, just maybe looking back on that, being better about, you know, letting him come a little bit more and letting that shot develop and make it a super high percentage shot. So, you know, if I do drop my bow arm or do something weird in the shot, that if I am off by 4 inches, it doesn't, you know, it's not a huge deal. So,
yeah. You had told me too, you were going to practice more going into next season, actually shooting at closer ranges and shooting under stress, more of like quick shots, which I think is interesting because so much of what gets played up is shooting at long ranges, so it feels like those short range shots are nothing. But at the same time, shooting quicker shots under stress at short ranges still has its place. Even like what you were saying, Steve, with a wolf being at 15 or 20 yards and like moving around this obstruction type thing, like there's still a lot of scenarios that can be practiced there.
And for me, it was one of those things that I was really in my head this year, you know, because last year I struggled big time with it. And so, I mean, I was definitely aware of it coming into this year, and I wanted to be better at making sure I was spending more time anchoring that pin at close yardage. Because, yeah, I'm notorious for that. Like, I love getting out and shooting long range and out at my yard. You know, I crank out 200 yards, and it's just fun, but it's not realistic. It's not good practice for what we're going to get into. And so, yeah, this next year, I'm going to go down in the trees of where I live and start getting into that thicker stuff, set up targets, and just try to recreate those scenarios, maybe under a little bit more stress too, if I can.
I think even just understanding arrow flight at shorter distances, just like you were saying, Steve, like, can I go over this limb? Can I go under this limb? If I hold on the limb, am I going to clear it? There's a lot that can come into play in this game of inches that is bow hunting with shot windows and close distances, and really understanding what your arrow's doing between leaving the bow and arriving at 20 yards downrange. Obviously, it isn't a flat trajectory, but what is it doing exactly is, I think, really important to know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that I think I used to, when I shot 3D a lot more, you know, you would get those occasional like 7 yard targets and 13, just super close stuff. And I knew back then what my bow would do, but it's something I just completely overlook at this point. And really my typical day at the range is start at 40 yards and then work out to, you know, 60, 70. And I need to pay more attention and shoot that, you know, 15 and under stuff more often.
Anything else, Tyler, that sticks out to you in terms of lessons learned or maybe new things to focus on after this experience from this year?
Well, I did get to spend a little bit of time waiting for Steve. I went out and got to go hunt with elk nut guys, got to help call for them or really just be pack mule. But I want to spend more time learning how to call and learning why I do certain calls and learn the motion of it and all that. I just definitely want to dive into that a little bit more. So looking forward to that. I've already probably burned up a couple of reeds since I've been home.
That's cool, man.
That's awesome. That's definitely same approach. Like I want to get better at calling, and then, but I know it'll be like August next year before I bust those out.
At least you're aware of it, Steve. At least you're not in denial. So Steve, you were supposed to join Tyler kind of earlier in the week. You ended up coming later. You ended up filling a tag after you met up with Tyler. Kind of get into your story of the week and how things came together. It's pretty short, relatively, I would say, like, quote unquote, easy hunt, or, you know, kind of seemed to go down that way. But what's the story?
So Tyler and I were supposed to meet the Friday prior, and I had like this freaking black plague move through my house between my wife, my daughter, and I. Like, we all had colds. My daughter got pink eye from having, you know, boogers wiped or into her, she was rubbing her nose and putting them in her eyes. And then that turned into an ear infection. And then that, my wife and I's turned into a sinus infection. Meanwhile, Bosch was out in the field the whole time. And I'm just like, I feel terrible. Like I want to get out there and hunt so bad, but it was the better part of 2 weeks before I got out. I think it was right around, the September 15th or something. Tyler and I were, you know, typical debating on where to go, had some different scenarios, different options. But we both kind of came to an agreement on one spot. Tyler had been able to kind of get in there and scout the country a little bit during that week that, you know, before he killed his bull. We just went out on a Friday, literally met at like 10 a.m., drove up there, and we had this loop planned where we dropped my truck off at point B and then drove Tyler's truck around to the trailhead. And I think it was like a 10-mile loop. We literally had 24 hours. Tyler had to leave and get home. So it was like we were on a mission to get an elk killed. It was either going to be that Friday evening or Saturday morning. There's enough elk in this unit. I'm fairly confident, if not borderline cocky, that I'm going to be able to kill an elk pretty quick. We were like fully going into that, like, we're going to get an elk killed. There's no question about it. You know, you had that kind of confidence behind you, which I really think just helps steer you. It's, I don't know how you acquire that confidence, but it just helps make a lot of those little decisions for you that just push you in that direction of being consistently successful. We got in there, and I think Tyler, kind of looking back at it, you know, we both had a destination in mind where we thought was going to be like the epicenter of, you know, a super benchy country, the most remote spot from between the two trucks. And we had this destination in mind, but there was this basin on the way in that just looked basically too good on the topo maps and looking at Onyx, you know, the satellite imagery, to walk past it, right? Like the trail went up the bottom and veered right. And to get up into this basin, we had to climb, I don't know, it was like 1,500 feet maybe, up to the left and to get in there. And I think, you know, it ended up being the right decision. We climbed up there. We started seeing some elk sign. And this is like, I think we started hiking at, was it noon? No, it was noon. Yeah, noon. And then so we got up there probably like 4 o'clock. We got into the basin and it was looking elky, right? Like you just kind of knew, like, okay, there's a couple rubs, here's some fresh poop, here's some tracks. Clearly elk have been here, are here. So we immediately decided like the first good place we could set up a cow call, we would. So we got in there, got set up, and Tyler did an awesome job of kind of call the elk nut slow play, I guess, or he's basically just, you know, I got set up 50 yards in front of him. He's behind me, and just breaking branches, kicking rocks, a few cow calls, a few kind of bull noises, never like a full on bugle, if I remember right. And we sat there for 20 minutes, nothing happened. And I'm like, oh crap. All right, well, where do we go from here? So we met up and started hiking, and maybe Tyler was at 100 yards.
Yeah, we didn't walk very far.
Yeah, we maybe walked 100 yards, and I don't know if it was you or me, but we had this big log, and we stepped over it, and a branch broke. And a bull heard that and chuckled, and we knew that chuckle was like maybe 150 yards away. And we kind of immediately just swung into action. There was no stop and discuss what we're doing. We were just on the same page. We ran in the direction of the chuckle. We kind of had this little clearing, and weren't exactly sure where the bull was coming, but we're paying attention to the wind. All right, which way is the wind blowing? We think the bull's going to come here. So we covered like 75 yards, I would say, within 30, 45 seconds. Got set up. Tyler got behind me, started cow calling. Luckily, I was in this these little kind of jack pines. You know, they're 10 feet tall. And a bunch of them kind of, it was open, but thick as far as like shooting lanes, you know, there's all these little branches everywhere. And I saw the bull coming down this little hill, like this little 10 foot hill. And I knew basically, I got lucky basically that I saw him coming, and I knew he was going to go about 75 yards to my left. And so once he dropped in, I quickly like just covered, another 30-ish yards. Moving through these little pine trees, felt pretty confident he wasn't going to be able to see me. Set myself up in where I had two different shooting lanes, and then literally the bull just kept walking right through. And he got by a couple of trees, came to full draw, caught a little bit of movement, stared my direction. But luckily, Tyler was back there, and Tyler wasn't fully aware of what was going on, but he just kept kind of kicking rocks and making cow call sounds and breaking branches, and it definitely had that bull's interest. And so the bulls stopped, and then he started moving again, and I was able to put my pins like in the shooting lane. You know, I could see him through, you know, the peripheral of my vision. Like, he was basically just going to walk into my pins. And hindsight here, I made a mistake, I think, ended up with a dead bull, but for whatever reason, there was a tree behind past him that was 40 yards, so I knew it was going to be like 35-ish yards. Put my, 27 high, 40 low, knew I was going to drill this bull. And I didn't think of cow calling. I thought of cow calling, but I was like, you know what? I'm not going to cow call. He's so close. He's walking slow. I'm just going to zip this arrow right behind the shoulder and kill him. And it was a mistake. He was walking the second, like, I didn't have to move my bow up and down at all. The second his shoulder blade came into it, I squeezed the trigger off. But just how it happened, I ended up hitting about 8 inches back of what I expected to hit. You know, it was amazing, just between the pins being where I thought they should be, or a little forward. I was planning on hitting a few inches back, but never imagined it'd be 8 inches back. Anyways, squeezed the trigger off, shot him, bull ran around. And Tyler got a glimpse of him kind of moving through the trees about 100 yards away, and saw that Tyler knew I'd shot, but then saw the bull kind of hunched up a little bit. That immediately sparked some concern in his head that maybe it wasn't a perfect shot. I wasn't sure. I saw when the bull whirled, I saw the exit, and basically was like, whoa, that's a lot further back than I was expecting, you know? And so we did there was a little bit of blood. We tracked it for like 20 yards at 6 o'clock at night. There's a couple hours of light left. How the terrain laid out, the temperature, everything kind of basically said, let's just let this bull lay overnight. It was a really, really tough decision, because I'm, as I've said on here a million times, elk meat is the prize for me, right? And leaving it overnight, you run the risk of that meat spoiling. I knew it was a little bit further back, so there might be some gut shot stuff going on here. And that was a long night, but I think hindsight, that's always the right call to make. If you're unsure, if you don't have a great blood trail, we had enough cues saying that the right decision was to wait. So we did. We just hiked a couple hundred yards away, actually got to glass a mountain goat hanging out on the hill and while we ate our dinner, and then woke up in the morning, and he didn't go 70 yards from where Tyler last saw him. He was piled up dead, and we cut him up, and then we had a little fun debate on if we should one trip him out of there or not. But ended up convincing Tyler to do it.
I was going to say, I can imagine how that debate went. I can imagine who started on the one trip side of that debate.
Well, no, I was kind of hurting. I was trying not to make a big deal about it, but packing on my board, kind of hyperextended my knee a little. And one of the guys saw it. And so, yeah, I was a little tender, and I was not trying to man up.
Well, that, and you've been up there for a whole bunch of days at this point. Steve rolls in fresh, well, maybe with a little of a cold, and then it's like, yeah, let's one trip this sucker.
Yeah. But it was the right call. It was pretty, I don't know, I'd say pretty mellow pack out as far as for what you could want out of one trip.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. We ended up 3.5 miles basically from the truck, and we loaded that sucker up, and one tripped her out of there. Bosch was such a freaking stud. We stopped once, and he was like skipping down the trail, just not, you could tell it was like, you know, didn't faze him at all. So one tripped him, and I think my pack was 132 pounds roughly. I weighed all the parts on a little hand scale once I got back to the truck, and I think Tyler's here had to have been, you know, right there within 5 pounds as well. So definitely a heavy load, but it was doable in that situation. We had the terrain kind of allowed for it. Normally, I think Boschman and I are both like, go before the hunt. We're talking, we're getting older and wiser. We don't need to do this one trip crap anymore. But it worked out. Got to get back in town, watch Boise State football game, and we had a burger and a beer, and it all worked out. So took a whopping 6 hours on that trip to get in there and get an elk killed, and man, we had a blast. So.
Well,
kills.
You didn't kill your opening day deer like you have for quite a few years past. So I'm glad your elk hunt was only 6 hours. So going back to the decision to let him lay overnight, was blood and how you were reading blood one of those factors? Like, was it darker? Were you thinking maybe liver? Did that play into it at all?
It definitely was just like red blood, right? It wasn't that super dark livery blood. It wasn't bright, you know, it wasn't that pink, lung blood. And we knew obviously it wasn't heart by where we saw the exit wound. So it was kind of like, you know, we knew it was back. There was decent blood, not phenomenal blood, decent blood. But it was the two factors of Tyler seeing just the tiniest glimpse of him looking hunched up, mm-hmm. and me seeing when he whirled and seeing an exit wound that looked further back than I was expecting. And I said, you kind of have to weigh a lot of different factors in there. We've talked about this before. If I shot him in the morning and it was going to be, super hot that day, mid 80s or something like that, then, you know, I probably would only given him 2-3 hours and risked bumping up at the chance of the meat not spoiling. It's a decision everyone has to weigh. But I said it was getting close to dark. We expected it to be cold. How the terrain laid out in this basin, even if he had wandered 500-600 yards with no blood trail, we felt like it was a pretty small basin. We felt fairly confident we could grid that sucker and find him. So it was just, if he had climbed up and over a ridge and then accessed some different country, he would have been, we'd never been able to find him. But that was part of the decision. Like, well, you know, if we do bump him, he may go that way, and we sure don't want that to happen. So, it's never easy, and you're always excited and you want to go put your hands on that animal. But, patience wins as long as heat allows for it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, too. I mean, it's tough for a guy to – and talk yourself into it. And like you're saying, it's nice to just go after him and grab him. But I think hindsight, you know, we did make the right decision there, but that arrow, it was like right on that line. Like it wasn't terrible. Like it wasn't full on guts. It was just right in that line of like that transition area. So I think he got a little both. Honestly, I think that bull died probably within a couple. I don't think he sat up there like the way he was laid and everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, we made the right call, but yeah, definitely one of those questionable times, but.
Yeah, it wasn't, we felt confident that at least like one lung or liver or something got hit. But we also knew the exit wound was a little back and you know, said if it had been pure gut, it wouldn't have been a decision at all. It's like, we're just waiting this out. So it was just, that is what I guess made it the hard decision. Cause you know, I think we both felt the bull was dead. It was just, is it worth the chance of bumping and pushing this bull out of the country?
Exactly.
Cool. Well, man, what a heck of a week there in Idaho. That's fun. Two bulls down and some adventures and wolf encounters and a bunch of fun stuff. So thanks for joining us and sharing those stories, guys.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. It was Bosch and I had a blast. It was the first time we ever really got to hunt together. So looking forward to many more trips.
We'll have to do the count the hours of time we actually hunt together, not days.
I like it.
Well, thanks as always for tuning in, guys. We really do appreciate it. Again, you can always send us any ideas, suggestions, topics you want to hear about to podcast@exomountaingear.com. And if you're enjoying the show, we would love to hear your feedback and see that in a review. That helps us out tremendously. Again, join us next week. We're going to have another good show. So much to come this fall. We're super excited about it. Glad to be back to the regular schedule. See you next week.